Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our Monday evening Hoops HD report. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top here on the top robe with Joby Fortson on that side and the puppet David Griggs on the other side.
Yes.
Down below, John Titel.
I don't like it here. I want to go down below.
I don't want to share a row with you either, David.
Me down below.
We got John Titel. We got Rocco Miller back joining us from bracketeer.org again. We've got a lot to get to. So, a lot of games that got played, the things that are going on. But actually, before we get to any of that, we do have to start on somewhat of a somber note here. A very, very sad news in the world of college basketball that just came down just yesterday. I guess it was late Saturday night, sometime Sunday morning. Lou Hill, the head coach of Texas Rio Grande Valley, the Vaqueros, he'd been there, I think, 5 or 6 years, passed away in his sleep. Just absolutely tragic news. He was 55 years old. My understanding is that he may have had some health issues previously. They was thinking about perhaps stepping down, but they were just coming off a game that night, Saturday night, where they had lost by 2 points at Texas Southern. Guy was a former Lon Kruger assistant and had put the Vaqueros in the postseason twice, a CBI and a CIT appearance, including two wins for the program in the CIT 1 year, which was the first two ever postseason wins for the former Texas Pan American, now Texas Rio Grande program. David, you had some thoughts on this? Absolutely, really, really sad news here for the team.
Yeah, just to echo what you had said, and it was real untimely, real unexpected. As you had said, he had coached, the game just the night before, and I believe he had just died in his sleep after it was over. And like you said, I mean, he was really elevating the level of that program. We don't talk much about it on the Hoops HD report. It's more of an under the radar story, but it was a story. This was a program with really no history or to speak of at all. And what did he have? Three 20-win seasons?
Two winning seasons, one 20-win season. That was the year with the two wins of the CIT, he got to 20.
Yeah, and then getting to the CIT, a postseason tournament, and going all the way to the quarterfinals, I believe. And that program was really moving in the right direction. They weren't really the doormat of the WAC anymore. And it's just sad to see something like that happen. And it's the second time it's happened this year where just out of the blue, seemingly, a team lost its coach.
Yeah, the tragic loss of Anthony Stewart back earlier from UT Martin right before the start of the season.
Yeah, he'd been at media day. I mean, you just like similar to this, you had just seen him the night before.
But on that note, the games do go on, and we do want to discuss things that happened in all the major conferences. Just as a note, we're recording this a little after 9 o'clock p.m. here on Monday the 8th. So the games that are going on right now, notably the Oklahoma State Kansas game and the Ohio State Maryland game, we're not going to have results of. And of course, the big, huge Gonzaga BYU game is coming up later this evening. So all of you watching this may know those results. We don't, so we can't really discuss them that much. But I'm going to go ahead and pull up the standings here and start today over in the ACC, which featured Rocco, the game of the season, of course, between North Carolina and Duke, because it's the number one rivalry and no other games count, correct?
That's right. It actually was a pretty big bubble game. North Carolina needed it to solidify their resume a little further, get another road win, and Duke needed it to actually get into the bubble picture. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for the Blue Devils. So North Carolina gets the win, and unfortunately, this is kind of turning into the Atlantic COVID conference, because North Carolina had a big celebration after the game. Turned out a couple of the some photos turned up this morning. Apparently, it was enough to give Miami caution, who was supposed to be playing them earlier tonight. They ended up canceling that game 2 hours before.
They traveled to Chapel Hill.
Because of photographs of these kids out partying without masks on. Yep.
Correct. So they were already in town, and that unfortunately got canceled tonight. We'll see how the rest of the week plays out for the Tar Heels and the players involved. But on another note, I think that's a broader theme. You know, Florida State had their games canceled last week, and they've got another one canceled here in the midweek. Hopefully they'll get back on the court this weekend.
The Vatek game is off. Yeah. That was a huge one too.
And you look at Louisville, they're hoping to just get two practices in this week, and they've got canceled games. And these are not just ACC teams. These are the tournament teams that the league really needs on the court. And a team like Louisville still needs to solidify their resume a little further. So it's been a reoccurring theme. Hopefully those teams can get healthy, safely back on the court and play some games before we get into championship week.
Yeah, about the teams that are on the court, Joby, Clemson is one of the teams that did get on the court, and they're starting to bounce back now and looking pretty good, aren't they?
If you look at Clemson, the games they've won and the games they've lost, Clemson, you know, if you look on a bracket matrix, the J&G is the only one who has them as a 5 seed. I actually think when you look at the win losses in their category, they are outstanding. You have some outstanding wins with the Alabama, Purdue's now in the top 25. Those are three top 25 wins. On the tier two wins are very good as well. They won this week. But the problem is, it's not who they lost to. They're all tier one. It's how they lost them. It is they just get curb stomped when they lose. But at the end of the day, I think we're undervaluing Clemson. I think that we, the basketball community, writ large, is undervaluing Clemson. I think that they are not a protected seed right now, but they are nearing that yet again. They need to win. They need to continue to win. And the rest of their schedule is extremely winnable. You know, they run the table, which is not out of the question when you look at those six remaining games. By the time we get to the ACC tournament, assuming they can play all of them, as Rocco pointed out, the fact of the matter is, if they're sitting at 18-5 with wins over Alabama, which is a 2 seed right now, Purdue, which is, you know, very high up in the seeding, Purdue, Florida State, which is a protected seed possibly right now, Louisville in the tournament, Maryland on the edge, Carolina in the tournament, Syracuse, bubble-ish. Yeah, that's really good. I mean, plain and simple. And that equals 4 seed, maybe even 3, depending on where they, how they look and how other teams perform.
I agree with Joby. Go ahead, Rocco.
I was just going to comment on Clemson. You know, the real concern with them is what they're doing on the road. Their last three road games and true road games, they've got blown out in all three. Georgia Tech by 18, Florida State by 19, Duke by 26. I don't know what's going on when they get away from Little John, but they've got to sort that out, I think.
They really do, and they have some low-hanging fruit coming up, like at Notre Dame, at Wake. These aren't exactly snake pits. Not that any place is this year without any fans, but – I mean, if they can't win at least two of those three road games, I'm going to be holding my nose a little bit when you're talking about them as a protected seed. Yeah. If they really are a protected seed, they should win out, because none of those teams, all of those teams are the kinds of teams protected seed should be. Went out to the regular season, not through the ACC tournament. Right.
Maybe the at Pitt, you can roll your eyes, you know, on that, but I agree for the most part.
Well, the other team I have up there, a team that we have not been seen play this past week, Titel, but the Louisville Cardinals, you have some thoughts on them?
Yeah, some bad news for the program. As we learned yesterday, Coach Chris Mack tested positive for COVID and his team postponed its third straight conference game. Good news, they have a capable assistant in Dino Gaudio ready to take over as interim coach. Bad news, as Rocco said, who even knows when they're getting back on the court? Radford transfer Carleek Jones has been a great pass-first point guard over the past 5 games, averaging 5 assists per game. He's gone ice cold from behind the arc to 1 of 10 from three-point range in the past 2 games. I have them as an 8 seed.
Yeah, if you look at it, they have that same well, they won at Pitt. They are lacking that quality road win, too, as well. And are they going to get that Vatek game in this weekend? I don't know if that's coming or not, which will be the chance for that. That's a TBD. Okay,
I would err on the side of caution with that, though.
Yeah, obviously, if they got that game and they got that win, I think it changes the complexion of that entire Louisville profile, though. Assuming that, of course, we just want to get healthy. Here is the upcoming schedule that you can cross half these games off. Probably they're not going to happen, including that heat, like we mentioned, that Florida State Vatek game would have been a huge one tomorrow night. That game is gone already.
That would have been.
Carolina, Virginia is good to go for right now.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know if those. I mean, I assume if Baycott and I can't remember the other player who was maskless, but I'm assuming if they test negative through that game, that it will be, that game will be on. But you know, it's like, guys, we started off the conference. What are you doing? That North Carolina-Virginia game, it's ESPN, it's prime time. that's very much a needed game for Carolina in a lot of ways, and a needed game for Virginia to solidify the building blocks that they've done to date.
Dayron Sharp was the other guy.
It's just really disappointing. Why would you take pictures of them and post it like that,
David?
Watch out! Watch out for Wednesday. A little known fact: Georgia Tech has won 11 straight ACC home games. It's the longest streak I think they've had in the ACC, and that's on the line when the Hoos visit on Wednesday night.
Who was the last team to beat them in Georgia Tech? I can't remember. Oh, that was Virginia.
I'm guessing you guys, if you're bringing it up.
Yeah, well, I didn't know I would have never known that unless Joby asked the question. Then I knew immediately who and what.
Another big one coming up a week from tonight, Virginia at Florida State again, assuming both teams can get on the court.
Oh, that's for the regular season crown in all likelihood. That doesn't go off. Yeah.
Chad, that one's off.
It's off already.
Florida State's playing Saturday is their next game so far.
Now I'm talking about next Monday, though, Virginia, Florida State.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Next Monday, Virginia, Florida State.
But it's still very uncertain. I know that the status of it is uncertain.
The Florida State VaTech is definitely gone, though. Let's jump over to the Big 12, where this is a conference that right now some of us are watching, the Oklahoma State, Kansas. But Kansas, I think, is the story here, because for the first time in 3 billion years, Kansas is not in the top 25 in either poll, which is, something I don't remember ever seeing in my lifetime. But I think it happened at once. But Kansas, Tytel, Kansas, played West Virginia and just got blown out again.
They did. Great week for the Mountaineers at Iowa State last Tuesday, only by a few points, but a double-digit win over Kansas any year, any place is fantastic to improve to 13-5. A brutal schedule ahead. 3 straight. Texas Tech, Oklahoma, Texas. Good Lord. Junior Derek Culver, the big man, has been unstoppable in his past 3 games. 20 points, 11 boards, 2 steals a game. And shout out Coach Huggins, 6 wins away from becoming the 5th Division I coach ever with 900 wins. I have them as a 5 seed.
They're the 5 seed. I think there's an argument that they belong in the top 4 in protected seeds. And Rocco, let me ask you about this conference. The more you look at it, we're putting Kansas aside here, and we still have 6 teams, I think, that are in play for protected seeds here.
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. I think Oklahoma State's in that top 20 now, and Kansas falling off. I think that gives us 6 still. Texas on a little bit of a free fall after their double OT heartbreaker in Stillwater over the weekend. All their losses are heartbreakers except for when Baylor took them to the woodshed in the final 10 minutes at home. But nothing to feel sorry about yourself about that.
Yeah, so, and Texas, if they nail free throws, who knows how that game tells. They were just awful.
Oh, well, they win it. They hit their free throws, they win it.
Yeah, I mean, they were, I don't remember the totals, but it was something like 5 of 14. It was that sort of awful level of awful.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Texas still has good wins, too. So if they can just, even if they cruise to the end with 7 or 8 losses, they'll still be in the discussion for
They've sort of gone into a tailspin, Rocco, like since the COVID sort of hit them. Now, part of that may have been COVID, and part of that may have just been going through a gauntlet of a schedule. But, you can't help but notice that, a team that was, what were they, like 10-2 is now 11-5?
10-1,
10-1, sorry, is now 11-5. And right. you wonder if COVID played a role in that, not having Shaka and being down the – was it 8 players at one point?
Yeah, I think the Oklahoma game was the real bad one. When they lost – and they lost by 1 point. It's not like they were
– Yeah, so I guess what really, I'm – and you, how do you evaluate that? How does the committee evaluate that? It's not a normal year, and maybe you almost have to just look at the profile and go with what's there, because there's just too many moving parts to keep up with. I still really think that this Texas team is dangerous, whether they end up on the front line.
They've got 3 or 4 NBA players, no doubt. So I'd
if they have
a healthy team, they're going to be a tough out.
And they luckily have the easy week this week. They at Kansas State and home against TCU. I believe the Baylor games are off, Rocco. Am I correct?
this week. The next two more Baylor games just got postponed.
Next two Baylor games are off, but we do have some big games still in the Big 12. Huge game tomorrow night, West Virginia at Texas Tech. You could also circle the Oklahoma West Virginia game coming up on Saturday. So there are some huge games on tap this week, even if we're not going to be able to see Baylor. So
yeah, and how about the Sooners? My God, they've kicked it into another year.
The Oklahoma has moved from what I think most of us were discussing 3 weeks ago of about a 8-9 seed, you know, sort of thing. Ah, they're in the tournament, they're boring, and they need to get some wins. Oh, they got their quality wins, and now we're talking, I dare say, 3 seed right now.
Yeah.
I want to talk about teams that were predicted for a very high seed right now. One of them is a team that's playing right now as we record this, which is Ohio State, that a lot of us are picking potentially on the one line at this point. But they're down 6 right now to a Maryland team that is sitting there at 9-9 against D1, Titel. What are your thoughts on this Maryland team here? Assuming with before this game, that because we don't know the results, obviously.
Hanging on by a thread, obviously the result of this game, I think, is going to have a very huge impact. They had a very nice 1-point win over Purdue last Tuesday. Very tough 5-point loss at Penn State on Friday. 4-8 in league play. Nobody likes that, obviously. Doesn't get any easier tonight. They need more consistency from one of their star players, junior forward Aaron Wiggins. Against Purdue, a double-double. Against Penn State, 2 points on 1 of 11 shooting. I have them as the very last team in my field. I think they're going to lose tonight, and I think they're going to drop out tonight.
That's kind of funny. I did a bracket today also and had them in the exact same spot. David, though, you had a comment on them?
Well, one of the things that's amazing, and again, we probably won't see this again anytime soon, they have played 1, 2, 3, like 6 non-tier 1 games.
Only 6.
Only 6. Everything
and one of them was against a pretty decent Navy team. So hey.
Yeah. So, like, when you figure 4-8 against tier 1 is not bad. That's actually sort of on par with what you normally see. Not way, way, way up the seed list, but inside the bubble. And this is another case where had they played a regular out-of-conference schedule, when you're playing teams that are Tier 2, Tier 3, in the hundreds, throwing a few bye games, say they had played 3 more bye games and they're 12-9, and then not to mention like the full 11 or 13 that they normally would have played out-of-conference, I don't even think we're discussing this team being on the bubble.
One thing is when you look at their schedule, they do have 6. I mean, Navy is a bye game, even though they don't play like a bye game. It's a bye game.
I mean, all
they did play 6 bye-ish games to their credit. But all Maryland needs, it's much easier said than done, is wins. Because and if you look at their schedule, even if they lose to Ohio State, which I think they can win tonight at home in Cole or Comcast Center, the fact of the matter is, Minnesota's awful on the road. They should win that. They should beat Nebraska because Nebraska stinks. Rutgers tough, but they should beat Michigan State at home. They should beat Northwestern at home. They should beat Penn State. You get them above 500, they are one of these teams that Rocco mentioned earlier last week, which I think was very prescient, which is they're not ever going to be in the play-in game. They're either going to jump from being out to well in like 8-9 seed.
Well, Joby, We have another team there on the right, though, with the same exact issue here with Indiana, 10-8, right?
I love this example because let's say Maryland beats Ohio State tonight. And we don't know that yet. But Indiana did beat Iowa.
Twice.
And so Indiana on the
game. That's not so good.
Yeah, well, I was still talking about protected seed, even though I would not have them right now. But they're still in that.
Well, I haven't had them there in a while.
Yeah, okay. But
I mean, regardless,
I was in the tournament wearing white right now. No one says they are. Indiana gets that win, gets that needed win. The JNG, which is mirrors the selection committee components, had them as one of the first teams out to jumping all the way to 36th in the seed list with just that one win because it was a quality win, but B, it puts them above 500 by 2 games with just a very strong schedule and only the Northwestern loss is a bad loss. Maryland's in the same position. Now, Indiana's very interesting because I don't know how much confidence I have in them. It's shifting gears to the analysis of them. I was going to come up with some great analysis. Oh, you know, Franklin and, Franklin's going to be the key or Al's going to be the key or Durham's going to be the key. No. it is exactly what everybody who knows college basketball and knows this team is. It's Jackson Davis. It's Jackson Davis. It's Jackson Davis. And those type of teams scare me for the tournament. But those type of teams seem to do, because there's a reliable component, do well in the regular season when you have that, once again, Minnesota coming to town sort of game and Michigan State. Yeah, I think the steady hand that Indiana has, Maryland and Indiana might wind up both okay. And that'd be fine because, in my opinion, the quality on the court might delivers that.
Tytel, where do you have these two?
I have Maryland, as I said, as my very last team out. I have Indiana, I believe, as a 10th seed. I have them as an 11th seed, but obviously more chances to win in the week ahead. Chad, it seems like Rutgers, since they're playing both of these, are going to have a very big impact on the bubble.
They will, assuming Rutgers can get these wins, especially, you know, because we got to keep Rutgers inside the field also at this point.
Well, they cracked the rankings today.
Rock, I want to ask you about one other team in the Big Ten, a team that I don't think we've spoken about as much as some of these other Big Ten teams this season, but the Purdue team here into the top 25, two wins over Ohio State now. Really, really nice looking resume, especially if you ignore that Miami loss. Absolutely.
They've had two wins over Ohio State for a while now.
Right, right.
It didn't just happen, Chad. Like you kind of implied that.
David, happened. Your name isn't Rocco. I mean,
we've had that for a while now.
I think the Boilermakers have a nice collection of wins. I think, especially with the Buckeyes sitting on probably the one line, the longer that happens, the higher you probably got to weigh Purdue in all these comparisons. You know, I keep weighing them against teams like Oklahoma State and Florida State, and they're measuring out right there with them. So, you know, those are going to carry a lot of weight as long as the Buckeyes are really good like this. If the Buckeyes drop off, then that hurts. But there's obviously still some time to go. The road loss at Miami, that's happened to a few other tournament teams as well. Starting to be a little more forgivable, but again, that 147 is not pretty.
Remember that loss happened. That was before Miami started having all of their problems, with injuries. So,
well, it was also a 22-point lead that Purdue blew in the second half. I remember watching that game.
That was the first game Chris Likes missed.
I thought he played
because it was a shock.
He missed it
to me that without Chris Likes, Miami could win. So that was, it was a shock.
Well, they can't win.
Yeah, they beat Purdue without Chris Likes that day.
So yeah, Chad, long story short, best seven-loss team in the country, Purdue Boilermakers.
Here's the upcoming schedule in the Big Ten on the screen here. A couple big games, including the Rutgers at Iowa game. Iowa is heading in the wrong direction, as David mentioned. Really needs to find a way to win a game. Yes.
That's just a testament to my genius in perception of basketball. Iowa continuing to head in the wrong direction.
I believe Michigan is still in their shutdown, so I don't think that we're not going to see that Illinois Michigan game or the Michigan, not certain on the Michigan Wisconsin game. That might happen.
Sunday's on right now.
Sunday is on as of now. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and Nebraska really missing 10 miles right now. I mean, imagine they'd probably be on the one line with him.
Well, Minnesota's picking up a home win over them as we record this.
I wouldn't put that so quickly. Nebraska's cut that to single digits after heavy.
If Minnesota can't win that one.
Minnesota goes out and whips Michigan by 30 or whatever it was in Minnesota, but they have trouble with Nebraska. That's funny.
Let's keep things moving along here. We could do a whole hour on the Big Ten, I think, with the depth in this conference. We do want to see a few other conferences. And over in the Big East, Creighton is a team that had a very, very strange week, John. and I don't like this team's profile right now, but I want to get your thoughts on them. I'll pull them up on the screen here.
I liked it a lot less after their ugly home loss to Georgetown on Wednesday. They did bounce back and scraped by Marquette by 3 on Saturday on the road to get to 14-5. They get the revenge game at Georgetown on Tuesday, and then the game of the year when Villanova comes to town next Saturday. I think of them as like this team that just shoots threes and nothing but. They're actually a great interior shooting team, 57% inside the arc, top 10 in the country. And you know all about Zegarowski and all the other stars. Christian Bishop, he only made one field goal at Seton Hall a couple weeks ago. Since then, unbelievable. 3 straight games, 14 points each game, 8 rebounds a game. Made 15 of 19 field goals. I have them as a 5 seed.
Yeah, I know that they are respectable tier three losses because they're better named teams and some than you know some tier three losses you see, John. But three tier three losses at home, it's so tough for me to say you're a five seed with that.
And I think you got to closely evaluate that St. John's game. While the Johnnies are on fire now, they were not on fire then. And I think you have to sort of look at how the team was playing at the time. It's not like they beat them a couple days ago.
I would say UConn is not as good as they were, though, at that
time. Well, and that's a fair point, too.
So I think it's a good UConn win to bounce that a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. UConn, a team.
Two UConn wins.
But the UConn team did not lose the home game to Seton Hall. And but Joby, Georgetown got the win over Crane, like we just mentioned, was very respectable in the game against Villanova.
Yeah. Everybody wants to, put, Ewing's coaching tombstone up, but I'm not quite there yet.
I'm not ready for that. I just don't think they're good this year.
And
they're getting better. That's the point.
Yeah.
But Georgetown, Georgetown is proving to be, and since we've been talking about them, it's kind of like Miami in a lot of ways. They had a lot of roster turnover that's quasi unexpected, but they're still getting the random Creighton win, giving Villanova trouble. Georgetown has done, I think, about as good as you can expect given what they were coming into the season with, but I almost defer to John, who was basically the beat writer in a lot of ways for Georgetown. So yeah, on the depth of how the expectations, I actually think this is the expectation of where they were this year, 3-6 and quasi competitive, maybe more competitive than we thought.
Go ahead,
no,
John.
They're not. I mean, The Creighton, it's a huge road win for Georgetown, but it stands out. And I agree, like, they were hanging with Villanova for, like, 30 minutes on the other night. But you look at these games, they should have lost to St. John's, somehow won by three, beat Providence by one, UMBC by eight, lost to Navy, who has a higher net than them.
St. John's really gave that game away. I will give you that. I mean, St. John's had it and just slipped away.
Okay. Rocco, I think the story of the Big East over the past week, though, has been the team I have on the right there, the Johnnies, with the Villanova win. They then would go out and win at Providence. They've now won six in a row.
I was impressed by the Providence follow-up win. You know, it takes a different level of maturity to have a big win in the middle of the week, a big celebration, I'm sure, internally. I saw Coach Anderson with get masks. Doused with bottles of water.
With masks. Celebrate with masks. Don't do North Carolina.
And then to turn around and go on the road and play a Providence team that really needed a win to get back into the bubble picture and do it handily. They won by 11, and that game was pretty well in hand most of the way. Speaks volumes to the caliber of play that they've elevated themselves to. And they're a really red hot team, and they get Butler tomorrow, another road test, but a team they should beat. So the Johnnies are on a roll, and there's no signs of stopping if their schedule says anything about it.
Yeah, with all those home games coming up too, assuming we get these games in, the at Villanova test, you put that aside, they could win 5 out of 6 here.
They really could. And to build on what Rocco said, I think Mike Anderson's style is really starting to take root. Sometimes it takes a little while. It's a pressure game. It's a lot of transition. It's a lot of speed. It's a lot of athleticism. And it can be kind of hard to adapt to right out of the way, especially in a year where there was a shortened – preseason and shortened practices and then a late start to the year. I really think they're starting to kick it in the gear. And I think they can get inside the bubble as well as they're playing now and maybe even make some noise once they're in there. But I think the overall health of this program is really good. I just think he's going to get it going there.
Right. There's the upcoming schedule for the Big East on the screen. Rocco's probably going to tell me that half the games are canceled, but we do see some interesting games, including Villanova at Creighton, and actually a big week for UConn with a game at Providence and a game at Xavier that they really could use a couple wins because UConn is heading in the wrong direction and doesn't have the amount of games as anybody else to really make up for any losses they suffer.
I hope we get to see that because Xavier DePaul got canceled today. So hopefully Xavier is able to play UConn on Saturday.
All right. They're still on there. Xavier's been shut down for
extended pause
while here.
Yeah.
Let's
good to see UConn back though.
Let's jump over to the SEC now. And John, let me start with you with a team that has gotten a lot of debate on each of the bracket rundown shows we've done on Thursday evenings, that I'm with you on them. I think they're a tournament team right now. I know David does not think
they're
so.
They are not, if it's who you're talking about.
But they did pick up a win, I guess, Tuesday against Mississippi State. I think that was the only game they played this week, if I'm looking at the schedule correctly there. But what about Arkansas?
The only team the panel hates more than Illinois is Arkansas. They did lose 4 of 5 to open January. They did win 4 of 5 since then. The only loss, 4 points on the road at Oklahoma State. 14-5. That's a good record. I don't care if you don't like them. It's a good record. Very tough road trip this week at Kentucky, at Missouri. I was worried about freshman Moses Moody. They talk about hitting the freshman wall. He only made one shot against Mississippi a couple weeks ago. Bounced back in a big way. 15 points a game in his past two games. And even though Joby disagrees, I have them as a 10 seed.
You really do.
I don't know if it's their lack of road wins or their lack of wins against teams on or in the bubble, period. But I can't really decide which one, but I'm just not seeing it.
I'm seeing this as a team that when you're looking at the garbage at the bottom of the bubble, when you're comparing them against a team that's 500 and you're seriously considering putting a 500 team in the field, David, don't you have to be looking at a team that's 14-5 and has no bad losses?
This is why I'm rooting for Maryland and Indiana.
It depends on who's bubble. Yeah. Well, no, Chad, that's a really good question. And like I know, like Tytel and Joby and Rocco, like we have selection committee guessing experts here. You and I are not that. But what's at the bottom of my field are not the teams that you've described, but rather Toledo, who I know just shot themselves in the foot, maybe the face this week, and Belmont and Drake and Loyola, and I like all those teams better than this Arkansas team.
Okay, but I'm giving three of those four teams auto bids, David. So that doesn't really go very far in helping your argument. But
no, it does. It's a great argument. I made a great argument.
Rocco, the big game this weekend, of course, was the Missouri Alabama game. Though, what a win by Missouri over the first place Crimson Tide there.
Yeah, Missouri. You know, this is a team. Ever since the first game, they felt disrespected. I think they were picked 12th or worse in the SEC by most. And they've come out all season long, especially, you know, in this game against Alabama and recent game against Tennessee, and really were the aggressor and took it to them and had a really good defensive scheme here in this Alabama game to limit what Alabama likes to do offensively. And that's get open looks from the outside. And you know, late, they really kind of crumbled and Alabama made a huge charge, but what a swap by Smith there at the end to ice the game. Mizzou overall, though, I mean, this is a team, again, a lot of veterans. Drew Smith played in the Missouri Valley, came over to Missouri, and there's just a grit to them. And, you know, I think they're, when anybody sleeps on them, they got a big edge. But they're also, they're not dominant enough to where, you know, they're prone to like a first round upset, but this resume is phenomenal. I mean, for me, they're borderline 2 seed right now, and I think they've earned it.
I agree completely. In fact, I did a bracket this morning where I had them on the 2 line, but
just a real quick thought. We got to get to Joby, but have I either this year or in previous years or in all the years we've been doing this, even back to his Missouri State days, ever mentioned that I think Quanzo Martin is undervalued as a coach? Have I ever said that?
Just about a million times. Joby, I know you have some thoughts on the Crimson.
Well, yeah, and it seems like when you look at the polls, which you shouldn't, you really shouldn't open the polls. But when you look at the polls, yeah, I feel like Shakespeare, yeah, Mark Antony going, I come to praise Alabama, not to bury them. I mean, my goodness, they dropped like 5 spots. They went to Missouri, who I think rightfully is in that 2-3 seed combination, make a furious comeback, lose in the final seconds, and then you combine it with an LSU midweek LSU win over a bubble team they just trounced. So that means you should drop them halfway down the polls. Insanity, as far as I'm concerned. This Alabama team is still a protected seed. They're still a 2 or a 3. If Missouri's not getting that 2, then Alabama's grabbing that 2.
Where are they?
What happened, you know, last week in Columbia, Missouri, not you know, not Tuscaloosa, Alabama, because I have a feeling if that game's played in Tuscaloosa, the result, the margin might be similar, but the result would be different.
David, real quick, Tennessee. Yeah. I think this is a team that was in that 1-2, maybe 3-seed contention.
For, oh yeah,
while, and this team is going the loss that Ole Miss this past week.
Yeah, and it just wasn't. They just haven't looked that good, even in some of the games that they've been winning. You know, just from the middle of January, blown the bits by Florida, losing at home to Mizzou. Now I know Mizzou's good, but Ole Miss is not, and. While it's not a backbreaking loss in and of itself, where I'm starting to get discouraged is while the win at Missouri is outstanding, Colorado at home, Colorado not the best team on the road. You know, Washington beat them. And, you know, Kansas is probably not as good as what we thought, and maybe that win isn't as impressive as what we thought. And Arkansas, not a tournament team.
Okay, now I'll give them the Ole Miss win was a buzzer beater.
Right,
Ole Miss should not have been in the game. Is my,
no, they shouldn't have been.
Should not have been in the game. If Tennessee is as good as we think they are,
yeah.
And that's I'm going to circle
Arkansas isn't a tournament team.
I'm going to circle a game coming up this week here. It is coming up, I believe, Wednesday night. I'm sorry. No, it's
good
not on there.
Job, Chad.
I thought I saw it on the team sheet here. I had February 10th there, which is what night?
That's
Georgia. Okay. Well, I don't see the Georgia Tennessee game there. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So well, I don't know if Tennessee. Got,
but Florida paired. Tennessee looks like a pretty darn good paired. Game. Not going to watch.
What game is on?
So, what happened? Yeah. So what happened was is A&M is still on pause. Florida's on pause. So they paired up Georgia to play at Tennessee on, I think it's Wednesday.
Okay. So the other screen was correct. This screen is wrong. That's the game I wanted to circle, though, because I saw it coming up here. Georgia at Tennessee on Wednesday. Georgia. Won four in a row, I think, very quietly playing much better basketball. Keep an eye on that game because these are two teams that are going the wrong direction. That's all I'm going to say on that. There's the rest of the games. Arkansas at Missouri for Saturday is that hopefully if that's a go, maybe we'll learn a little more about this Arkansas team as well.
Yeah, if Arkansas wins that, I mean, I won't want to admit it, but I will.
Okay.
Well, Arkansas is at Rupp tomorrow too. So
yeah.
They should win that one.
That's a bye game, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, Kentucky, I keep waiting for them to snap out of it. Like they yeah, have
they
so
like
much
they were going
talent.
To on Saturday.
But, yeah, it yeah. did, and they still could, I suppose. But like,
let's run over to the Pac-12 here, where earlier tonight, before we started this show, John, we saw Colorado fairly easily take care of Oregon State at home. Finally, looking good against a bad team.
Yeah, a weird game last Saturday against my Wildcats. So the Buffaloes get out to a 19-2 lead. So, of course, I changed the channel. Check back in the second half, and somehow Arizona's up 4 with 3 minutes left. And then Colorado goes on a 12-5 run to win by 3. Great, great choice by me to come back to it. One of the most experienced teams in the nation, 3 seniors and 2 juniors in the starting 5. And the leader, point guard McKinley Wright, past 7 games, 14 points, 7 assists a game. He's made 29 of 32 from the free throw line. I have them as a 7 seed.
I like that pick there.
Yeah.
But the best team in the Pac-12 right now, Rocco, can we say it? Is it the Trojans?
It's the Trojans right now. And they earned it. I mean, they gave UCLA a dosage of their defensive medicine. And they've been doing it all year, very quietly. You know, I wrote a little bit about their defense last month. It's just every time I watch them now, it's just amazing what they're able to do on that end of the ball. It's not a sexy way to play. It's not your typical LA, you know, style. But kudos to Andy Enfield to really go against his typical strategy. Really went defensive minded this year, and maybe it's because nobody could go to the games anyway. You might as well make it unsexy. So it's working very well. Evan Mobley, I mean, this guy's winning freshman of the week almost every single week in the Pac-12. He's probably off to the NBA, but they are finding. I think they learned a lot from having Okonwu last year, who was an amazing player, top 10 pick. Plug Mobley right into that role. They got his brother. They got good guards. This is a team that's quietly dangerous, I think.
Yeah. Just what do you guys think about that? Because Andy Enfield, again, one of his better coaching jobs, at least I've been really impressed because of what Rocco said. This is not how they typically play. It's like he's almost reinvented himself and had something else in his toolbox that I never knew was there.
Exactly. I mean, that's what I'm seeing too, David. It's a complete reimagination of strategy, focused on defense and getting, you know, opportunistic offense, but it's not about like high flying run and gun dunks with runouts on the other end. And, you know, that's what we were seeing in the past, and they were losing to teams, you know, in the bottom of the league doing that. So they really cleaned that up.
And Joby, because UCLA lost by 18 points, so they should be written off, right?
No. The Smith entry, they've been playing without Smith for, you know, about a month now, and he was such a key factor, especially early on for them. And so, you know, they're not at full strength. Riley, I actually think losing Riley for the USC game, he should come back, was extremely important because he was supposed to guard this guy named Mobley that you might have heard about. And so what that did was it allowed and opened up Ethan Anderson just to destroy them. I mean, just absolutely destroy them on the inside. So I think once they get their pieces, I know Smith is out for the year, but I think once they get their pieces back, UCLA will be back to where they should be. But these losses that they're taking, the water that they took on against USC, will have the impact, because who will get the number one seed in the Pac-12 tournament right now? Inside straight, USC.
David, real quick on the Oregon Ducks, bad home loss to Washington State this past week.
I'll go ahead and finish
it. Given the fact that they're behind everybody, the amount of games played, only thing they have to hold their hat up. Only thing they got is this neutral court win over Seton Hall. This doesn't look like a tournament team to me right now, unless they really turn it around.
Well, yeah, not on paper, it's not, and really not on the court either. When they lose to Wazoo, I think they have the pieces to be a tournament team. I think in a normal year they would be a tournament team. I think one of the biggest things, maybe not the only thing, I mean, you can't excuse everything, but maybe you can explain a lot of the struggles due to the shutdowns and just not being able to get on the court. But yeah, when they have been out there, they've kind of underperformed. Like, you know, losing to Wazoo and Oregon State.
And look at the schedule they've got left there on the screen. 5 out of 7 are on the road. Two home games include a Colorado game. It's not an easy schedule the rest of the way.
It's not. I don't know if on the road is what it is in most years. Well, it's not because of the lack of fans. But when you're under house arrest, when you're at home anyway, because a lot of the COVID restrictions and the constant testing, sometimes going on the road is a little bit more relaxing, because while it normally means you're under these tight restrictions of being on the road, sometimes this year that's actually looser than what you have to deal with when you're on your own campus. So maybe, as crazy as that sounds, and I don't want to start a crazy discussion, but I've started to notice some teams are actually better on the road this year. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why.
In addition to the Oregon games this week at the Arizona schools, assuming they're a go, I think the other game we've got to circle is Colorado Stanford Thursday night. That could be a real good one, assuming it's a go.
I have Stanford hugging the bubble. I wanted to ask you guys about them. Like, are they straddling the bubble? Or are they inside of it? Are they safely inside, or am I undervaluing them?
I think they're safely inside until they lose to a non-tournament team again. That really puts them at risk. But as long as their only losses ahead are against some of the other tournament caliber teams, I think they're okay. But they'll have that test this week with Colorado coming, and Utah, who's playing a lot better, will be here on Saturday.
Yeah.
Right. They need that UCLA win to not fall apart, because that's really what's buoying them.
Well, Alabama too.
Very they beat out along with the Alabama win. Obviously the Alabama win is just an anchor, but that was huge. So early. Now it's like, what have you done for me lately? UCLA is late. Yeah. So,
okay. And a win at McHale is a nice win. Yeah. Real nice win.
All right. Quickly over to the Mountain West Conference, where we've been singing the praises of Boise State all season. Boise. And Joby, bad week for Boise, getting swept at Nevada.
Well, this is an interesting component. They get swept by Nevada, and this is the sort of thing that can't happen. It's one thing for the San Diego States and the Colorado States and the Utah States to all trade off losses. As a matter of fact, that actually helps everybody's resume, because It's the joke of, well, that was a good loss you got because you allowed them to beat you. Yeah, you know, sort of thing, because all four of them are very much in the tournament discussion. But now with Boise's loss, nobody is in the top half of the tournament discussion, except if San Diego State were to go on some run of some sort. So with the UCLA win again. So Boise is endemic of the issues facing the Mountain West. And we're going to see another conference that's in a very similar position. You can't lose outside of it. But for right now, they are hanging on. I think they're in the tournament. That at BYU win is good, along with the Colorado State win. They're in, but it's the whole conference that's affected when Nevada comes along and knocks you off twice in a row.
I will give a shout out. Steve Alford has his Nevada team playing a lot better than they had been at the beginning of the season. This team isn't up. I'm not for this season, but for next few years now, I'm really looking at this Nevada team as a team that should become a force in the Mountain West.
Yeah, they have been before. They will be again. I agree with you,
Joe. John, next year for sure. Yeah,
they will be.
John, Utah State, on the other hand, got one win at Fresno and was about to tip off the second game when it got canceled. But what's your thoughts on them at this point?
Very weird profiles. You can see the number that jumps out to me is on the road 4-1. I assume that's one of the best records on the road of any non-undefeated team in the nation, just because not a lot of teams are winning on the road, despite David's correct point that it is easier to win on the road this year. This is a team they blew three of their first four to start the season. I thought they were going to throw in the towel, bounce back, won 13 of 15 since then. They have an easy pair of games against Wyoming this week and then a very tough road trip to Boise for two games next week. Great interior defense, only allowing 42% inside the arc. That's top 10 in the nation because of the seven-footer Nemias Keita. He's averaged – he gives them some offense, 13 points and 8 boards a game during the past six games. He's turned them into one of the best defensive teams in the country. 4 blocks a game during that stretch, 58 blocks this season, is number 2 in the country.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing that's helping with Utah State here is VCU is a team that they lost to that has been rising up, and that loss is looking a lot better lately as well. So this is one of those things, Joby, I know you like to talk about it, how well the teams that you beat and the teams that you lost to play as you go through the season can really help your profile.
And it's really indicative of what I was mentioning. San Diego State twice, Colorado State once. Not an out-of-conference Tier 1 or 2 win, but those help buoy you. And when you have San Diego State going out of conference and beating UCLA, the transitive property, especially with fewer data points in the COVID year, comes in handy for the entire conference.
There's the schedule of the upcoming games this week. A couple games going on as we speak, and as we're recording this, the Air Force Vegas game, the San Diego State hosting San Jose State for a pair starting tonight.
Okay, so essentially, really like games that don't couple mean of anything, bye games not started yet. Thank you for clearing.
UNLV at Boise State. UNLV has picked up a couple wins this season of note, although they're looking bad against Air Force, Wyoming at Utah State this week for you to look at. But let's just jump right over to the Atlantic 10, maybe can we get right and Rocco, the team to discuss this week is the Billikens, who bounced back with the huge home win over the Bonnies this weekend.
Nice win for the Bills. They played great in the first half, let the Bonnies back in, and then late went on a big charge to win by 11, which is going to be really nice for the net. I know they jumped up quite a bit after the win. The thing about the profile is they've got three really nice wins. They're all at home, NC State, LSU, now the Bonnies. They've got to be able to prove it on the road. They've got to get enough games in. You know, both the Bonnies and the Bills, the biggest challenge is they just have a lack of data. They only got 11 games in so far. So getting these games in this week are critical. I know they got a struggling Rhode Island team in a Fordham game this week on the road. So they're not going to really move up too far with those. But if they can win and get some help around them, that will be a step in the right direction.
Right. And the Bonnies, Joby, again, I think we at the same question I've asked you a few other teams. Did we write them out off now that they lost the game? And you're on mute.
Most certainly not. But they're in the trouble zone. They don't have the data points, as Rocco was pointing out. The A-10 is a mirror of the Mountain West in a lot of ways. Same issue. Right now, you could make an argument for four teams – right now. I mean, I don't think all four would get in, but you can make straight-faced arguments for Richmond, VCU, Bonnies, and St. Louis. But without the data points and without as many out-of-conference victories, I know VCU beat one of those Mountain West teams, but with and Richmond has the Loyola Chicago win, which a team we'll discuss in a moment. But the fact of the matter is there aren't the big out-of-conference wins. I mean, LSU, I mean, it's not UCLA. It's not at BYU. And so the anchor for the Mountain West is actually ahead of the A-10, and the A-10's problems are compounded when two of their best teams are profile-rich teams that might be looked at by the committee, don't have the data points in the first place. These two on the screen right here, the Bonnies and St. Louis.
And John, one team that both these teams still have on their schedule on the road is VCU. And so what about this VCU team? I think we mentioned them a few minutes ago. How far is this team moving up?
Amazing. They've quietly, in my opinion, won 11 of 13 to get the 13-4 overall. Tough week ahead. They had the Dayton Tuesday and they host the Bonnies Friday. And this is kind of a one-man team in terms of sophomore guard Nashawn, a.k.a. Bones Highland. He's been playing like one of the best players in the country over the past three games. 25 points a game, 13 of 26 from behind the arc, 18 of 19 at the free throw line, and a little defense with two steals a game. And as Joby said, this conference, it could make up the entire first four outlets. I have the Rams and Richmond and St. Louis right on the bubble, but outside looking in as of right now.
Yeah, ignore some of these schedules here on the screen. You can see there's multiple games as schedules get revamped. It's been a nightmare keeping these schedules straight on the screen this season. So I'm not going to profess that what you're seeing here is correct, and the games will probably be canceled and moved anyhow.
I just love that. Let's take a look at the upcoming games. Here's
a bunch of games. I think I see VC with 15 games this week if you look at that calendar right there. Yeah. So let's just go ahead and jump over to the American, David. And Houston, Wednesday night at East Carolina, we talked about that the Houston's loss at Tulsa was the upset of the season, I think just a week ago. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was not.
There was a year where Kansas, I don't know if they were ranked number one, but they were a one seed caliber team. And I think they ended up with a one seed, lost to TCU or at TCU, who was a sub 200 team. This wasn't that bad, but it's about as close as anything to that I can remember.
Even with the win, they're still in 11th place in the standings.
I mean, it was just a like stupefying upset. and you know, is it one of those that is just so out of left field and so bizarre and so out of character? I certainly remember that. I think we were all like, oh my God, is this one of the biggest upsets of all time? Like they were 200 spots apart. But at the same time, I think it was so ridiculous that you just sort of ignored it. Do you just sort of just dismiss this as just a really bad day for Houston, or is it indicative of some cracks in the armor or problems? I don't know. I still think Houston's really good, but that may have sunk them a couple of seed lines.
Well, Rocco, this was a team that was on the verge of the one seed line until the loss here. Do we just kind of ignore it because it's just a fluke loss, or do we really have to ding them for it?
I mean, it definitely matters. It's not like they get a lot of chances to build wins to make up for it in this league. It will be hard to go out and win the rest of their games. I thought they gave a lot of effort and energy on the Sunday before to beat down SMU in that second half, and I think they overlooked East Carolina, and they paid dearly for it. I would like to think they're still pretty darn good because I love a lot of the ways in which they win ball games and attack the glass and get after it on the defensive end. But the resume is the resume, and there is a little bit of a punishment there. And I think they might end up on the three line because of this right now.
Right. Well, maybe they're just looking ahead to that Our Lady of the Lake game they had on over the weekend. Maybe.
Yeah.
They had a lot of fun with the lady.
Yeah. John, is there a second team, and is it potentially a team that still gets two shots at Houston in Memphis here?
I think so. I mean, David has a little known rule that if you get swept by Frank Haith, then you're outside the bubble period. But the team has won 6 of 7 since getting swept, and their only loss was by 2 on the road at SMU. almost overcame a 16-point second half deficit, so they should get a little credit for that. They host Cincinnati Thursday, then head to Houston for the game of the year on Valentine's Day. Some people might think free throw shooting does not matter. I say, look at this team. Three of their last four losses were by 3 points or less, and they're shooting 62% from the line. They have to start making free throws.
Anyone who says free throw shooting doesn't matter is an idiot. Sorry, go ahead, John.
You're welcome. Sophomore Landers Nolly only made 32% from behind the arc last year when he was at Vautech. This year, he's pumped that up to 40%, and he's a volume shooter. He's made at least three threes in six of his past eight games. This team, I don't think they're going to get there, but they're close.
The issue the American has is that the wrong teams are right now beating Houston. We'll see if Memphis can crack that code, because East Carolina and Tulsa are not game. But if Memphis or SMU's miss their opportunity, we'd be talking about those teams very differently. So we'll see how Memphis does.
I'm with Tytel. I don't think they got it in them to do it. But if they go to Memphis and win, or Houston and win,
and they get Houston again at the end of the season at home, so they still get them twice here. So if they lose this game to Houston, there will be another opportunity for Memphis if they can do things like beat Cincinnati on Thursday, Houston at South Florida before the Memphis game, allegedly. Over to the West Coast Conference, where the game of the year in the West Coast Conference is going to be played after we finish this recording this, but probably before most of you are watching it. So I don't know how much we can really discuss about it. Rocco, real quick. I mean, the Zags took care of Pacific. BYU took care of Portland this week, and that's all that happened to the conference, pretty much.
Yeah, it was a sad week. I was Saturday, and the night was it was getting late in the night. I'm like, wait a second, what was missing today? Yeah, no West Coast Conference games. It was a tough one. I really look forward to those games on Saturdays. But tonight hopefully makes up for it. You know, something I looked up a little bit earlier today. Every year since BYU's joined the WCC, every NCAA year they've had, which I think has been five, we'll call it six because they would have been in last year. They've beaten Gonzaga at least once in all those years. So if they're a tournament team this year, the trend suggests they'll find a way to beat them either tonight or in the tournament, the WCC tournament. Obviously, the Gonzaga team this year, even more of a juggernaut than we've ever seen. So something's got to give. But overall, let's hope some of the rest of these teams get on the court. And I do want to give a shout out to Pacific, who really hung with Gonzaga for about 30 plus minutes and eventually gave in.
Right. And you know, as far as Gonzaga's schedule go, this game tonight at BYU, this is probably going to be their toughest game until the Sweet 16, quite honestly. So
it probably, yeah.
Or the rematch in Vegas,
but
right?
Even the rematch will be at a neutral court, not at BYU. So
yeah, it will be in altitude. So yeah, that's a factor.
If Gonzaga decides to play.
There are, at least on the schedule, Gonzaga after this game at Santa Clara, at San Francisco. Don't know if those are on. BYU hosts St. Mary's, hosts San Diego. Also, don't know if those games are a go or not. Given how much
Santa Clara games are all canceled this week, I can tell you that.
Okay, so there goes that game for the Zags, at least. We do have one other team we want to discuss here. Last week, we discussed Drake on the show because they cracked the top 25 rankings. They promptly lost. So they are back on, going to be on our Wednesday night Under the Radar show. However, their conference mate, Loyola Chicago, took their spot in the top 25, coming in at 22 in the AP poll, 23 in the coaches poll, off of a pair of wins over Evansville here. So here's the question. David, let me ask you this. How good is this Loyola Chicago team suddenly as we're suddenly tossing aside Drake and talking about them instead?
Good. I've thought that they were better than Drake for most of the year. It took them a little bit to get going, whereas Drake got going right away. While they did have to sweat some games out, they managed to win them all. But as you see Loyola Chicago there, one of their losses at Whiskey, well, Whiskey might be a protected seed. The Richmond game was close and Indiana State a bit of a fluke. So, you know, that is, you are sort of holding your nose there. But Missouri State, a strong team at home, you know, won both of those. They avenged themselves with Indiana State. I just think that, like, nothing on their profile really jumps out, at least initially. You have to peel back the onion to see it. But the metrics, not, and I don't mean the net so much, although that is excellent, as the adjusted defense and offensive efficiency ratings, this is just a really good team. Porter Mosier, a really good bench coach. I think he's doing – I know that they went to a Final Four, but, like – they actually are, I think, at least during the regular season, are having a better year this year.
Well, David, that's the thing point I wanted to make here is I would argue, Rocco, would you agree with me that this might be a better team than the team that, yeah. that went to the Final Four?
No, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you just compare all the predictive metrics that David suggested to that year, you can look that up right now, and you'll see that these rankings are even more impressive. Yeah. They're higher across the board, I think, in both overall offensive and defensive, all three areas. And the question I had is, like, you know, before predictive metrics really gained steam in the last few years, I can't remember an under-the-radar three-loss team with their best win being against North Texas per the metrics – getting ranked. I've seen it happen with a undefeated team and a one loss, you know, Murray State type of team. And
I can think of one, Rocco, but go ahead. I'll tell you who it is.
With no wins over 86.
Davidson, the Steph Curry year, the year that they went to the Elite Eight, had no top 100 wins. Okay. But they got into the top 25 the last week of the season. Yeah.
Well, even that was at the end of the season. There's less out of here for Loyola at this point.
Right. Now, they were 3-6 out of conference. Most people kind of forgot that. And, like, the six teams they played were all, like, top 15 teams.
They were all close games. UCLA.
Yeah. Like, I think five of those six teams ended up with protected seeds, and they played really well. So there, it oh, wasn't
Virginia like was they one had of them. It, they had Virginia was one
they
of them.
They did? Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
But, yeah, I remember not knowing what to do with them. I was trying to guess the committee at the time, and I'm like, well, what the hell do you do with this? No top 100 wins, but – wow. But they won the conference tournament anyway.
Rocco, you were finishing up your thought.
Yeah. I guess the greater question is it just speaks volumes. I think that more and more, this is all about what the AP decides, right? So that just a lot more attention going into these types of data points. And I think that's good. I think there's a purpose for it. I mean, the rankings, in the end of the day, don't matter for what ends up happening with the committee, but what it does matter for are things like recruiting and, you know, well-deserved attention. And I think Loyola Chicago has earned this, and it's good to see.
And the games of the season coming up this weekend in the Missouri Valley, assuming they're a go, Saturday and Sunday, big Loyola time. Chicago at Drake.
Those are on them, watch them absolutely.
Yeah. National TV for both.
National TV, they moved it to national TV. Good move by ESPN to do that.
It would serve the conference well for a split because
it would serve the conference well for a split. But if either team gets a sweep, they're in great shape. I think Drake has to squeeze in a game against Northern Iowa before that, also this weekend, midweek. So, Loyola Chicago definitely could be the more rested team for these games.
Yeah, and like St. Bonaventure and St. Louis need games. St. Louis, right there. Come on.
Well, I mean, it'll be a normal week, Chad. I will say with that. It's not like Northern Iowa and Drake are, you know, they have to do a cross-country trip there.
No.
Well, I think it's an interesting storyline, though, because if you remember last year, Northern Iowa was the team on the bubble, and yes. Drake spoiled their season in the 1-8 quarterfinal game, and now Northern Iowa gets to play spoiler. So Drake's got to be real careful on Wednesday.
Yeah, Northern Iowa preseason, we were talking – if you had talked to all of us about a Missouri Valley team ranked at this point in the season – every one of us to a man would have said Northern Iowa.
Then they lost half their team to injuries. But
yeah, I mean,
well, I'll tell you what. Let's move over to final thoughts here. We're almost out of time. Actually, let me pull out the screen share, Rocco. Let me start with you while I get the screen share back up before I go to John.
Yeah, great show. I think, you know, one other note that just came across is potential SEC Player of the Year is Herb Jones for Alabama. He got a chance to participate in the shoot around today, but there's a lot of doubt he might not play at South Carolina, which could make that road game a little more interesting tomorrow. The Tide looking to get on track, of course, after the loss to Mizzou, and get back in the hunt for the one seed, which, you know, folks like Lenardi had them as a one seed last week. So anyway, keep your eye on that tomorrow. I think otherwise we covered pretty much everything. So great show, guys.
Yeah, thanks. And John.
So there's been a lot of talk recently about how Duke and Carolina are not ranked and other teams are having a rough go of it. But as Chad will show you, I saw this today on Twitter and it just blew my mind. It's not just that the bluest of the blue bloods, none of the top 13 winningest programs in the history of the sport are currently ranked. I know UCLA has been hanging around and that like Kansas was there before falling off, and it's only February. So there's time for some of these to rebound, but think about it, that all these amazing traditions with some of the best players and coaches in the history of the sport, and none of them scare me this year. It's just hard to comprehend.
And yeah. John, an interesting thing is Purdue loses this week. It goes from the top 13 to the top 15 because Purdue is ranked 15th and Western Kentucky is 14th.
Ah,
so it could, that list has the potential to increase.
Although UCLA, I think, just barely missed it.
Yes, and UCLA
is in the coaches' poll still. So UCLA could get back into it. So
yeah, certainly,
they may have to lose also. But Joby, your final thoughts.
My final thought is we have some great, human bracketologists here in John and Rocco. And it's really remarkable, though, what I'm seeing on Bracket Matrix, another website, which shows all the best bracketologists out there along the line. And
which is how we know ours are so good.
Yeah, it is. We've got three folks, but the JNG is also on it. Yeah. What is the interesting thing, and this is where the Clemson thought that you heard during my ACC talk comes from. It's, oh my gosh, as opposed to about 2 years ago, I feel like the one thing that's starting to happen is a little group think there. Yeah, I'm starting to see everybody's brackets, except for ironically some of the metric component brackets, start to be all a lot the same. And in this particular year, I find that amazing, given how tough it is to evaluate teams. So what I wonder is, at the end of the year, are we going to see, especially with COVID, some big time curveballs that even the experts, the computer rankings, the experts just don't get because COVID throws the wrench into it. And the analysis that all of us put into it was absolutely wrong. And when it'll be wrong is when you have such groupthink, it will be so left field. It'll be interesting to see how the world reacts. How did such and such get an X seed, or why are they included? Why is this team not included? And so teams like Arkansas versus a Loyola Chicago at large who loses will be extremely interesting.
So the question of why did Colgate get a 4 seed based on their 15?
I can tell you because someone needs to not use the net as a ranking system, but as a opponent.
Oh, they're actually up to 13 in the net today. David, go ahead. We've got to finish off the show.
I've been thinking about this for a while, so I guess I'll pull it out this week. A lot of things about this season have made it harder to enjoy, particularly the cancellations and the shutdowns. But just all the work, the extra work, particularly from the players and coaches, but really from a lot of other people that have gone on to making the season play out even this far. It's college basketball, being a player, it's never easy to begin with. It's even harder this year when it feels like you're under house arrest and you're getting tested 3 times a week. And like, you're not allowed to eat on your bus because of COVID and the mask, you have to eat outside of it. I mean, it's just a lot of these different rules and protocols have made it more strenuous than normal on a lot of the players and coaches. So I just, as a fan, admire that everyone is as committed to it as it is to try and get it through. I hope we never, ever, ever, ever have another season like this again. And right now, I almost don't really care how it plays out so long as we're able to finish it.
I agree completely. I mean, I want to see a tournament. I want to see somebody cut down the nets. And when I look at how many games are getting canceled each day still, it really scares me. But maybe that'll be a bigger discussion in 1 or 2 weeks from now still. But for now, I do want to thank everybody for joining us on behalf of Joby Fortson and John Titel up top here. And look, Joby, I got David down to the second row.
Good,
for
thank
you.
Thank you.
David Griggs, Rocco Miller, you can check him out at bracketeer.org as well. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again real soon.